Good evening. Welcome, everyone, to the 529 Emergency Preparedness Discussion Net, courtesy of the WA7ABU 529 repeater. This is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. My name is Brett, and I'm net control for today, Tuesday, March 24th, 2020. This net meets each Tuesday evening from 7 to 8 p.m. local time on 145.29 megahertz. This is a designated emergency frequency, so we'll break if any real emergency occurs. Our alternate frequency is 145.19 with a tone of 100. We appreciate those who stand by and allow us to have a clear frequency for the next hour. As we discuss COVID-19 in particular, emergency preparedness, we have a guest speaker again tonight, Sheila Sun, MD, who has a lot of experience with emergency preparedness and has been in charge of large hospice organizations and outpatient care. She's served on committees associated with planning for comfort care and crisis care guidelines for large emergencies. And she's been following the COVID-19 crisis as it's been developing since January, and spent a lot of time reading and trying to understand what's happening and following the trends that have you're just unfolding in the news. But she looks at the data and she understands it, and she is here to answer your questions. Make a good trip. Just a few ground rules tonight before we get started. This is not a political discussion forum. There might be some other forums for that, but tonight we're going to focus on the facts and some evidence-based things about how to keep yourself safe and, you know, part of answer questions about how this illness is transmitted and what you can do to keep yourself safe. We're not going to, you know, focus on what you've heard on you know, for any particular news person or politician or rumors or whatever. Please don't. You can ask questions. That's the main thing, is to make it interactive and try to get your questions answered. She has a good head of what this stuff means, and she has a good head of what's happening currently in Oregon. If you have any questions about the rules that are in place, what's happening in the hospitals locally, you know, she can answer those for you. Okay, so let me get started with checking you guys in. Okay, again, there's no such thing as a dumb question, but let's try to keep political opinion out of the questions. Is anybody on Echolink that would like to check in for the Emergency Preparedness Net? If you come now, please. Okay, so again, we'll take general check-ins. Will you please check in with your call sign slowly and phonetically, and also your name and location to be recognized by Net Control. Let's take general check-ins for the Emergency Preparedness Net and special COVID-19 discussion.
KNRCP.
Sierra Hotel Mike. Steve in Albany on a handheld.
K6 Sierra Tango X-ray, and I've got at least 6 questions to ask that have to do with all kinds of different things. So it'll be an interesting discussion. K6STX.
Whiskey 7, Charlie, Mark, Bruce, Dundee. Brett, could you speak up just a little bit? For us old guys, it's a little hard to hear. Thanks.
You know, Foxtrot 7, Quebec, Victoria, Daryl, Salem.
Kilo 7, Alpha Romeo Tango, Art and Canby.
And November 0, November, Oscar, Fred, and Whiskey 4, Delta, Oscar, X-ray, Nancy, Lafayette.
Whiskey 7, India, Victor, November, Ivan, Albany.
Kilo 5, Charlie, Papa, Charlie, Mike, and Happy Valley.
W1, Alpha Romeo Kilo, Robert in Salem.
K7, Juliet, Charlie, Delta, John in Portland.
This is Whiskey 0, Echo Delta Foxtrot, Richard in Taggart.
Okay, let's pause there for just a bit. That's 14 of us here, so let's go through the list. I'm going to go backwards. That was Whiskey Zero, Echo Delta Foxtrot, Richard. Kilo 7, Juliet Charlie Delta, John. Whiskey 1, Alpha Romeo Kilo, Robert. Kilo 5, Charlie Papa Charlie, Mike. Whiskey 7, India Victor November, Ivan. We had Fred and Nancy, November 0, November, November, Oscar. And Whiskey 4, Delta Oscar X-ray. Kilo, Kilo 7, Alpha Romeo Tango, Daryl, that was Art. Kilo, Foxtrot 7, Quebec Victoria, that's Daryl. Whiskey 7, Charlie, Charlie, Mike, Bruce, and I'm trying to speak up. Let's see, W7NAT, Nate. Kilo 6, Sierra Tango X-ray, and I have you down here as having six questions or something like that, so I will mark you there. And then we have Whiskey 7, Sierra Hotel Mike, Steve, who doubled a little bit, but I got you. And Kilo 9, Romeo Charlie Papa started us off, Richard Dundee. Anybody else want to check in?
Kilo Bravo 7, November Juliet Victor.
Kilo Juliet 7, Delta Zulu. India Tango, Zebra Brian Kim.
Okay, hold on just a second there. We had to get a double in the last one there. I did hear Kilo Juliet 7, Delta Zulu, that's Frank, and another Frank, Kilo Bravo 7, November Juliet Victor. Then there was a kind of a scrambled double from Washington there. So let's hear the Washington statement station, please.
Well, I'll try again. K7, Victor, Victor.
That's Kilo 7, Victor, Victor. Vince, well, that didn't come across as... So maybe if you didn't hear you tried to call and I didn't repeat your name, then you doubled. So try again. Anybody else want to check in for emergency preparedness net?
Kilo Juliet 7, India Kilo Whiskey, Rick, Scotts Mills.
Kilo 7, Alpha Kilo Zulu, Andy in Portland.
Kilo Alpha 7, Juliet Lima Oscar, Jeff in Albany.
November Whiskey 7, Oscar Romeo, and November 7, Delta Kilo Bravo, Richard and Deborah in Albany.
Kilo Foxtrot 6, Foxtrot Yankee Delta, Richard and Salem.
Kilo India 7, Foxtrot Whiskey Hotel, Alan. And Kilo India 7, Foxtrot Whiskey Papa, Jennifer, South Salem.
Okay, let's take a little break there. That's 25 of us for a good crowd tonight here. Let's go backwards again. Kilo India 7, Foxtrot Whiskey Papa, Jennifer. And Kilo India 7, Foxtrot Whiskey Hotel, Alan. We had Kilo Foxtrot 6, Foxtrot Yankee Delta, Richard. We had November Whiskey 7, Oscar Romeo, who is another Richard. And November 7, Delta Kilo Bravo, Deborah. We had Jeff, Kilo Alpha 7, Juliet Lima, Oscar. And let's see, got a new one in here. Kilo 7, Alpha Kilo Zulu. I looked you up. Is that Andrew? Is that the correct name there, please?
You got it, Andy or Andrew.
Okay, well, okay, let's tell you what, I think we have a quorum here, so what we'll do is we'll pause on it, because it's not a check-in net, and we want to get to your questions. What I'd like to do is introduce Sheila Sund, MD, and I have put out, she has a blog with two articles that she'd like to, to bring to the forefront for tonight's discussion, so if you'd like to follow along, the website is disasterdoc.net. I'll do that phonetically for you. It's just like all one word. It's Delta, India, Sierra, Alpha, Sierra, Tango, Echo, Romeo, Delta, Oscar, Charlie, dot, November, Echo, Tango, disasterdoc.net. That is her blog, and she's been putting some articles on there about our topic tonight, and I'm going to... let her introduce, give you update, and then introduce the topic, and then we'll take your questions. And I do have Dan Mark there for having some questions for us. But let's get her started. She's not a ham operator, so hopefully she won't. We'll keep her on task and keep her from timing out here. But with that, this is Kilo Golf 7 Golf Delta Bravo, and here's Sheila.
Hi, everybody. This is Sheila. I just wanted to spend a little bit of time focusing on how you should be thinking about the risk to yourself and how you're living your lives through this. I wrote an article called The COVID Cloud, which basically means that you think of every person around you like Pigpen from Peanuts. They've got a 6-foot cloud of potential virus particles. You don't know who's infected and who's not. They may not know who's infected. But you just want to try and minimize your time in that cloud. If you happen to brush past them in the grocery store, stand briefly next to them in a line, hey, it's not a big deal. You know, you're not going to get sick from that. But if you stand next to them for a long time, you're basically breathing in their pigpen cloud. And I have found that's a really helpful concept to just look at when you're out in the world, or even when you're in your own house, is just try and stay outside somebody's pigpen cloud, and you're really going to drop your risks of getting infected astronomically. The second thing I want to talk about, since we are now all socially distanced and hanging out in our houses, there's a lot of concerns about my packages and grocery delivery, but the really important thing is who gets in the house with you. Really, you have to look at the risk of anybody that comes in your house, that's your family members. The person in your house that is the most exposed is actually the risk for everybody in the house. So if you have somebody in your household that works in healthcare, their risk is really, really high right now. So even if the other 3 people in the house are being perfect about everything they do, if the healthcare worker comes home and shares space with you, everybody in the house now has a higher risk. If people don't come in your house, they don't have any risk whatsoever. You can visit with them in the backyard. But you have to really pay attention to who you let in your house. If you don't let anybody with medium or high risk in your house, you're really about as safe as you can possibly get.
Okay, is there any questions or comments on that? So 2 articles she's talking about there, there's actually on this disaster doc, your house is your fortress, and there's some great information there, some pictures and things you want to follow along. But does that make sense to you? It talks about the time you spend in somebody else's pigpen cloud is really the important thing, and how risky is that person's behavior when they come to you. So any questions on that?
CPC.
Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
Yes, we have a nurse that comes by about once a week to get a blood draw for an INR, and she'll understand what that is. And I really don't want her in the house, so we're gonna do it in the garage with the door open and plenty of fresh air, and with a table and a chair out there. Are we at minimum, do you have any better suggestions?
I'm assuming she probably doesn't have a mask. That's the biggest question. Healthcare is pretty short of masks. If she wears a mask and the gloves she normally would wear for a blood draw, your risk would be low even within the house. If she doesn't have a mask, what you're doing is a good idea. Do it outside. Have her get everything set up. Have her come within your 6-foot cloud for the shortest period of time possible to do the blood draw, and then get back out of the cloud while she finishes up her stuff. Once she leaves, go inside, wash your hands really, really well, and that's probably the safest way you can do it.
Thank you very much.
Okay, that was an excellent question. I hope everyone heard that. He basically was asking, if you have to have a healthcare worker come to your house for a routine blood draw, can you? He's very thinking about it very carefully. Yeah, okay, you want to minimize that, get the airflow going, if you have them wear a mask, because they are more more prone to have carrying this illness than you are, who has been sheltering in your house. Good question, Mike. Yeah. Any other questions on that, what we've covered so far there? Okay, now I have covered this in the past, and we went over it pretty quickly, but, you know, is it safe to get a package delivered to your house? That was something we were talking about with, you know, people last week were trying to wonder about what, you know, how long does this virus live on a surface? You know, am I going to get ill from picking up my mail? So let me have her, again, reiterate the strategy for that.
Well, first of all, I want to emphasize that most infections that we have been able to investigate over the world, most of them are probably coming from interpersonal contact, and the risk of getting sick by what you touch is less. Now, if you're touching things like grocery store carts, that's a higher risk because there's lots of people that have touched it. If you're taking care of a sick person and you touch things around a sick person, that's pretty high risk. But things that come to your house are not what I would consider high touch. They've been touched by a few people, but they've also spent a lot of time riding in a truck and in a van and going through the mail. So they have a risk, but compared to the risk of who you're around, that risk is minimal. So what can you do to minimize even that further? Have a hot zone in your house. Pretty much everything that comes in from the outside, whether it's a package that's delivered to you or the groceries that you picked up at the store, stop it at the entrance to your house. Don't let the things that have touched the outside world come past that hot zone. That's your shoes, that's the grocery bags, that's your purse. You just stop them in the hot zone. You unload your groceries from the grocery bag. And if you don't need to unload them for 24 hours because they're cereal boxes, better yet, just leave them sitting there in your hot zone for 24 hours. We think that things that are cardboard and paper, probably the virus dies on them within 24 hours. So if you don't need to do anything with it, just let it sit there for 24 hours. The things that you have to take out right away or things that are smooth surface, plastics, glass, things like that, if you have a disinfectant, rub them down with a disinfectant before you put them in your cupboards. The last thing you want to do, however, is to take things from the outside, bring them in, and set them down on your kitchen counters or places that you're going to be touching, because now you've potentially contaminated those surfaces.
Okay, that was a very odd double there. Let's try that again.
JLO.
RGM.
Okay, so I think we got a, I don't think we checked in Reiner here, but we heard Jeff there. Hold on, Jeff, let me see. I know Reiner. Whiskey 7, Romeo, Golf, Mike. I don't think we checked you in, but you're checked in, Reiner. So let's take Jeff's question. Go ahead.
Yeah, going first with bags from grocery stores. We now, in at least where I live, grocery bags are something you pay extra for. So a lot of us carry our own bags or containers in to put the groceries in as we pick them off the shelves. What precautions do we need to take directly with the items we get off the shelves? Second of all, how much protective gear should we wear when we go into a grocery store? And by that, I mean masks, gloves, and that kind of thing. Clothes that, you know, like rain gear that we can take off at our hot spot. So two questions there.
Okay, here's Sheila.
So your own grocery bags that you're bringing in and out of the store and that you're putting things in, I consider those hot. Okay, so they never get to go in your house. They have to stop in your hot zone. The groceries have to come from the bags in the hot zone directly into the cupboards. As far as what you need to go to the grocery store, the biggest thing you need to do is make sure that you don't hang out within 6 feet of somebody for very long. Space yourselves out in the line. Step back away from the checkout person. As far as protective gear, you don't need a mask. You're not sharing enough air with anybody long enough to worry about a mask in a grocery store. You could consider wearing a pair of gloves that you put on while you're in the grocery store, load up your car, and then throw them away so that they don't come into your house. But if you don't have gloves, they're kind of hard to come by. That's okay. Do your grocery shopping. Put the stuff in your car. Then go wash your hands. You can go back in the store and wash your hands, or if you really want to be clever, just put a jug of water in your car and some liquid hand soap and wash your hands, pour some water on them in the parking lot, scrub them up, pour some more water on them to rinse them off, have a couple paper towels, wash them off, and then you've basically gotten rid of all the risks from the grocery store. When you get home, you use your hot zone for your groceries.
K9RCP.
Okay, so let me, there's Richard there. Hold on just a second, I want to make sure. Did Reiner, did you have a question? Because I want to go back to, originally we had STX had some questions. Let me first check and see if Reiner had a question based on the, what we've talked about so far and whether STX Dan had anything on this topic.
Not really a question. But we tried to explain this to some friends of ours, and they actually thought when we said hot zone, they meant a hot place in your house. And so you might clarify that for people that don't understand the terminology.
Sorry, yeah, sometimes I get into a little more technical terms, so thanks for the correction. A hot zone is just an area that is at higher risk. Yeah, we use it for all kinds of things in disaster preparedness. For you, it means that one area in your house that is at higher risk of infection. So you're going to put everything in there, and it doesn't go past there, and that keeps the rest of your house at lower risk of infection. So anything that comes from the outside, it goes into a spot at the entrance of your house, which I'm going to call the hot zone, and then you minimize the things from the outside that have to leave there. And then you don't bring the infection into your house.
Okay, good, good, good question there, Reiner. So let's see. Let me go back to. I don't want to miss anybody here. So we have Richard RCP on there. We also have again STX. Did any of your questions that you had, Dan, before I move on from this topic? Did you have anything on what she said so far that you wanted to ask questions about?
Well, one of the things is U.S. mail. Now, when I worked at the post office when I was in college, the mail gets touched by a lot of people, not just your carrier. There's people that sort that mail out to the different routes inside the post office. There are routing people who send it out to different locations on the sending end. There's a lot of people that get their hands on that thing by the time it gets to your house. So, if you have the mail delivered, say it comes in the afternoon, you just let it sit in the mailbox until the next morning? That's my question there. That was part of it.
RGM.
Okay, pause for just a second there, Reiner. Let's let her address that one first.
So what I do with my mail is we pick it up outside. We come in and we have a spot in my hot zone or my high-risk zone just inside the door. The mail gets set down there. While I'm walking back and it's dirty and I'm outside, I thumb through it to make sure there's nothing I need to handle urgently. If there's not, or things I can actually just throw in my recycling bin on the way in. But if nothing needs to be handled urgently, it goes into a spot in my high-risk entry zone, my hot zone, and I just leave it there for 24 hours. As best we can tell right now, things on cardboard and paper, it doesn't look like the virus is living much longer than about 24 hours. So if you just don't touch it for 24 hours, you're probably pretty safe. However, even after 24 hours, when I touch things from the outside, my mail, my package, my groceries that I've left sitting there, I still scrub my hands really well when I'm done touching them. And I don't bring them in and put them on my kitchen counter. They go from my hot zone to whatever file they need to go into.
Okay, that leads into another question is, we also get a paper delivered every morning. Now, do you let the paper sit out in the driveway for 24 hours before you go pick it up? And another thing you didn't address, well, about the food, if you have refrigerated food that needs to go into your refrigerator upon getting it home, you're still going to have to handle that right away.
As far as the newspaper, I was just having this conversation with my mom. If your newspaper comes in a bag, you just take it out of the bag. The bag's the dirty thing. I wouldn't worry too much about the newspaper because that's all a machine process. But if it's open paper, yeah, technically it's dirty. So you could put it in your hot zone and let it sit there for 24 hours. Or if you want to read it, choose a place, put your chair in by the hot zone, read it there, dispose of it there, and then wash your hands really well afterwards. You don't get to bring your newspaper, however, in and sit in the recliner and then, you know, tuck it away for reading later.
Comment about the post office.
Yeah, Reiner, actually, wait on the post office thing. Yeah, the groceries is the other question he had was about the groceries here, because I think we paper in the post office and we already talked about paper, but we didn't talk about putting stuff in the refrigerator. So let's let her address that, and then I haven't forgot about RCP. You're out there. We'll get your question here too. Let's address the putting the cold food away.
Again, I do want to emphasize that although we're taking precautions, the risk of the things that you touch from the outside is nothing compared to the risk of the people you come in contact with. So it's appropriate to take precautions, but don't get overly anxious about the things from the outside world, things. Worry about people, not things. As far as your groceries, I take my cold items out of my grocery bag in the hot zone. I wipe them off with a disinfectant wipe or a wipe that's had a bleach solution sprayed on it. I wipe them off in my hand, and then I put them into the refrigerator. I do the same thing with glass jars, plastics, etc. When I've done all of that, I let the cardboard and paper things stay in my hot zone for 24 hours if possible. But when I'm done putting everything away, then I use another disinfectant wipe, and I wipe off the handles of the refrigerator and the cupboards that I put things in, and I wash my hands, and I think I am completely safe by doing that.
Okay, this is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo, and we do have the Emergency Preparedness Net here, and we're talking about COVID-19 strategies to keep your home your fortress. Let's see, I skipped over canine RCP before. Did you have a question there, Richard, or comment on what we talked about so far?
Yeah, this is Kilo 9, Romeo Charlie Papa. It's kind of a mix, actually. Most of you probably may or may not know, but you know, I have a breathing condition where I only have 51% lung capacity, and if I ever got COVID-19, it would be severe detrimental to my health. And so I treat it as if it's hemorrhagic fever, you know, or worse. So, you know, some of the things that I've done, and maybe Sheila can say if this is overkill or if it's considered, you know, decent. And I don't expect everybody to be able to do it. But, you know, when I went and purchased food, you know, a large amount actually, a lot of things you can't just, you know, sanitize. You can't just, like, bleach it really easily. You know, stuff that could be, you know, of course, it, you know, you wipe it down and everything. But I actually purchased UVC lights, very powerful ones, actually, and built a 3-foot by, like, 2-foot box. And everything that goes from the hot zone to the potential cold zone at that point passes through that. And so whenever we get the mail, we throw it in there, minute on each side, basically, of whatever we put in there, and UVC kills it. But as for everything else, you know, bleach water, of course, kills it as well, but you have to let it sit. So that's just what I personally do, because safety, you know, you can't risk it with in my health. Anyway, Kilo 9, Romeo, Charlie, Papa, back to that.
Okay, good, good. Yeah, so there are other strategies. Let her address that your question there. Hold on.
I don't see any harm from using the UV light. So far, I've not actually found any studies that have truly shown whether that's effective or not. So like many things, I don't want to call it overkill, but I also don't want to suggest that people go out and buy one. I don't think it will do any harm, but at this point in time, I also am not sure that it's going to be effective against this virus, particularly with the amount of UV that you can have at home. I will say that some hospitals, because of the incredible shortage of PPE, have started using some UV types of sterilization, but they're doing it because they have no other choice, and they're acknowledging that they don't know whether it's working or not.
Okay, real scratchy check-in there. Maybe, BLU, could you do that in phonetics, please, for us?
Kilo Juliet 7. Bravo, Lima Uniform.
Aha, there we go, Nick. That is Kilo Juliet 7, Bravo, Lima Uniform, and that's why I use phonetics. We heard you that time. Very good. Thank you for checking in. We'll take a few more check-ins. This is the Emergency Preparedness Net. Anybody else want to check in right now?
Kilo Foxtrot 7, Gulf Yankee November.
Kilo India 7, Hotel Tango Papa.
Yeah, good evening, Brett. Kilo 1, Victor India November, Kevin Salem.
And I still have more questions.
Okay, very good. Well, we're up to 30. This is Kilo 1, Victor, India, November, Kevin. Kilo, India 7, Hotel, Tango, Papa, Daryl. And David, Kilo, Foxtrot 7, Golf, Yankee, November. Okay, let's go back to Dan, STX. Give us another question, please.
If a respirator had become necessary, would a BiPAP or a CPAP machine work in its stead?
For people who don't know what those are, I'm assuming you're talking a CPAP machine like you would use for sleep apnea. Those are devices that people have at home that they wear a mask on their face, and it creates a pressure in their lungs that helps keep their airways expanded while they're sleeping, and might be of help in this setting as well. They've looked at them in the hospitals a little bit, but the problem is that they spew virus into the environment around them. Whether you could do it at home if you were completely isolated from your family, maybe, but we do know that using in a hospital setting is not an option because of the amount of virus that they generate and put into the environment.
Okay. Another question. Oxygen. It appears that they've made a run on oxygen tanks and people trying to get oxygen one way or another. Oxygen for welding situations, or oxygen from welding tanks, is that okay to breathe?
First of all, I think the most important thing to realize is getting oxygen for your own use is pretty much a waste of time with this virus. What the virus does in your lungs is it fills up the spaces where oxygen is exchanged with inflammatory gunk and virus and things. So you can pour all the oxygen in you want, but it's not going to actually work because a standard mask or something in your nose or breathing it in will not actually get the oxygen into the air spaces where you need it to get into your bloodstream. So there are a lot of risks with using oxygen, particularly not so much what you breathe, but in terms of safety of how you store it, the flammability, et cetera. There really is no recommendation for people to do this at home. A, it won't help. B, it is dangerous to do this at home if you don't know what you're doing, and C, we need all the oxygen possible to be able to deliver through ventilators and the appropriate ways that can actually do good for people that are sick.
Bravo, Lima Uniform with a question.
I only got one more, and then we'll call it quits here, K6STX.
Okay, and we didn't address the industrial gas thing, and I don't know if that would be a, you know, I wouldn't breathe anything that was not approved for medical use, so you don't try to do that either. Let's get Dan's final question here, and then we'll take another one here. So go ahead, Dan.
Well, my final question was, here about a week or so ago, they said that they wanted everybody to, stay isolated or so for a 15-day period. So the question is, when did that date actually start? Or is a 15-day period ongoing thing, like maybe 15 days isn't really 15 days? It could be like, who knows, 15 months. I don't know. How's that good thing working? The 15 days, does that even mean anything anymore?
What you're looking at is the difference between 15 days to make sure that you are safe after you've been exposed versus how long does society need to isolate itself. If you've been exposed to the infection and you quarantine yourself for actually 14 days and you don't have any symptoms, you can be assumed to be safe, that you're not infectious, you can go about and join the rest of the world and whatever level the rest of the world is at. The things that are longer than the 14 days are what we need to do to shut it down in the community around us. And that's not to keep you individually safe. That is to allow the healthcare system to keep functioning. If we cannot drastically decrease the number of people out there that are spreading the illness, our healthcare systems will be overwhelmed very quickly. And we don't have the materials to take care of all the people that would be sick if that happens. How long will that last? It's going to be longer than 15 days to be safe. If it works, it's going to be about 15 days before we'll start to see the rise in cases drop off. But there are still people out there that do have to work in essential industries. We're not shutting down like they did in China. And so it's going to take a strategic analysis of where we are with infection and a strategic way of letting people back into the community, or in a very short time, we'll be right back where we are right now.
Well, the problem with that is that then you will not know the day that you got infected. If you get infected by one way, does this take effect on your body immediately? Or can it happen like a week later? How do you determine what a 15-day period would be? Because you won't know where the start time is.
Yep, that's the problem. In fact, there are a lot of people that are infected, particularly younger people, that don't even know that they're sick, but they're still contagious. So, again, for yourself, if you have had close exposure to somebody you know tested positive for it, like if you have sat in their car with them for an hour or you've shared a house with them, you should assume you are probably infected and you should be on full quarantine away from everybody. Otherwise, yeah, you could get infected, but the longer you stay away from everybody, the odds go down. I'm now at 10 days since I've been around anybody in my house, 7 days since the last person in my household has had contact outside. So if I go by her as the highest risk, in another 7 days, we're all home free as long as we don't expose ourselves in the community.
Okie doke. Well, very interesting. K6STX, back to net there.
Okay, and this is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. You have the 529 emergency preparedness app with a special discussion, question and answer with Sheila Sund, MD, on COVID-19. And again, for those tuning in, we will actually have a recording of this on the website. Hopefully John is doing that, and along with Richard, EDF, and if you want to hear this later on or play it back, that's good. Also, if you have questions that we don't get to tonight, please send them either to, you can send them to me, my call sign, Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo, at ARRL.net, or you can go to disasterdoc.net, which we gave before. This is disasterdoc.net, is her blog and website, and you can either leave a comment or it has a contact me at the top, and click on that, and it will send an email to Sheila. She'll answer your questions there, or we'll use them next week for when we come back for another discussion if we haven't covered it. We also have the groups.io for WA7ABU, and that's another place to send questions. Okay, anybody else want to check in or have any other questions for the doctor here?
RGM.
TUT.
7, Alpha Bravo Uniform.
Bravo Lima Uniform.
Whiskey Bravo 6, Sierra Romeo Papa, check in.
Kilo Foxtrot 7, Tango Uniform Tango, check in and question.
KK7, CAT.
Alpha Golf 7, Oscar Golf, Echolink, check in, Newberg.
KG7, CKL, checking in, Malala.
Okay, pause just a second there. Going really fast. I'm going to ask if you could please, the last person, just repeat using phonetics if you can. I just can't tell C's from D's from E's and things like that. What was your call sign from Malala again, please, and your name?
Kilo Golf 7, Charlie Kilo Lima from Malala. This is Corina.
Okay, I got Kilo Golf 7, Charlie Kilo Lima, Corina, and I'll get you checked in. Also had, let me go back through the list here, a whole bunch of people. Alpha Golf 7, Oscar Golf, that was Doug. Kilo Kilo 7, Charlie Alpha Tango, that's Landon. We had another new one I didn't get the name on. Kilo Foxtrot 7, Tango, Uniform Tango. What was your name again, sir?
Daryl N. Kaiser.
Okay, got you there, Daryl. Kilo Foxtrot 7, Tango, Uniform Tango. We had Ben check in, Whiskey Bravo 6, Sierra Romeo Papa. And Dan checked in, and Dan has the best signal, so he won like a big triple. Whiskey Alpha 7, Alpha Bravo Uniform. Now, if you didn't hear your call, you doubled. And so anybody else that I didn't call, come now, please. Okay, and I know there were some questions in there, and because Dan, I think, beat the other ones out. Dan, did you have a question?
Yes, I heard something brought up from the rest home in Washington that had so many fatalities that the nurse they interviewed today said she never saw any real symptoms from these folks except red eyes. Nobody's ever mentioned anything about a symptom of red eyes. And these people didn't appear to have any other symptoms until the very moment that they were being shipped off to the hospital. And it's odd that this new symptom popped up. Has anybody else mentioned red eyes? WA7ABU?
Sheila, I have not actually heard specifically about red eyes, but I would say I have a little bit of questions about reporting of symptoms from nursing homes, just because of what their basic staffing is, even under healthy circumstances. My suspicion is that the red eyes meant that they were probably having fever, decreased fluid intake, a variety of things which will give you red eyes. Nursing homes, unfortunately, even under the best of circumstances, are not always the best at noticing those kinds of things. I don't mean to be critical. It's just the reality of how nursing homes are staffed. I did want to go back to, however, what people manifest when they get sick. Many people don't have hardly any symptoms at all. That some can have none. But what we have noticed is that people often get a little bit of a symptom, and they think, oh, what was that? They're better for a day or two, and then bam, they get horribly, horribly ill very quickly. Some of those people can still ride it out at home. They get very sick. They're often sick, like the worst flu you've ever had, the kind that would normally make you think about going to the hospital, but you probably can ride it out and not die. A lot of people are getting that, including younger people, and it lasts 7 to 14, maybe even longer days at home. The thing that makes people go to the hospital is because on top of this horrible flu-like illness, they have really bad shortness of breath. And that's when those air spaces are starting to fill up with virus and debris, and that's when they have to go to the hospital. But the unique thing is that people have minimal symptoms, or they have a little bit of symptoms that then seem to improve for a day or two before it comes back with a vengeance. Don't know for sure what that is, but it's probably the initial infection kind of generally hitting you, and then it hits your lungs and organs a few days later.
And this is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. Yeah, along with unusual symptoms, there have been reports of people losing their sense of smell and taste. That actually is a real report, so people have been noticing that. It's kind of an unusual symptom that is not present in other illnesses. Was there any other questions in that for her this time?
Bravo, Lima Uniform.
Yeah, Nick, go ahead. Better signal now.
Yeah, better radio. My questions are, the use of albuterol, does that open up the alveoli to let the oxygen in? Another question is immunity after infection. Once we get it, are we free to walk about and ignore it? Third question is using a team on a BVM to aid the patient in breathing. What do you think about those three questions? KJ7, BLU.
Okay, the first two questions, I think she got. Could you repeat the second one? Because you used an abbreviation there about a team and a. Can you repeat that again, please?
Yeah, so it's about having a team use a bag valve mask to aid in breathing.
Okay, she'll let her address those here. There you go.
Unfortunately, albuterol, for those who don't know, albuterol is something people with asthma, COPD, lung, those kinds of lung diseases use. What that does is it dilates up the air passages. So if you think of your lungs like a tree, you have big branches, they break into smaller branches, you break into smaller branches still, and eventually you get out to the leaves. The leaves are what we call the alveoli. That's where the oxygen actually gets into the blood. Albuterol works on the branches and makes the branches bigger, but it doesn't do anything for the leaves, and unfortunately COVID-19 is destroying the leaves or the alveoli. So it doesn't help to get more air in through the tubes. You got to do something about the alveoli. As far as manual ventilation helping, it does work. You just really, what you need to get oxygen is a lot of pressure pushing air into the lungs that can basically push oxygen through all that debris. And that's what the ventilators do, and you can do that with a hand ventilator, except that you're probably going to need to be doing that continuously for 5 to 10 days, which is not likely to be feasible. And I think I forgot the middle question in there, so you'll have to give that one to me again.
Yeah, the feasibility of the BVM, that's why I mentioned team. And I realize that it would take a lot of manpower, but, you know, some people. My question was immunity after infection. Once I get it, can I just walk around without regard?
Well, that is the million-dollar question. We actually don't really know yet. We're assuming that you have at least temporary immunity. So far, that's what seems to be the case in China and in South Korea, but it's not been long enough to actually know that yet. So we're making a worldwide assumption that if you've had it, either from a positive test that shows you had it without symptoms or because you were symptomatic, we're presuming you're immune, but we don't know if that's 100% true, and we don't know how long it's going to last. Some things, like if you got measles, you'd be immune for life. If you get the flu, you can get it again the next year. If you get a cold, you can get it again the next year. And so we're a little bit worried that this coronavirus may end up like the last two, but honest to truth, we don't have any idea yet.
Thank you very much for your time. KGA7BLU, continuing to listen.
Comment KF7TUT.
Okay, and let me do ID. Kilo Golf 7 Golf Delta Bravo here with a third party, Sheila Sund, MD, who's answering your questions. And we had Kilo Foxtrot 7 Tango Uniform Tango. Daryl, go ahead with your comment.
Thank you. From what I've been reading online, it appears that viruses can be killed off with temperature of 140 to 150 degrees. And a sauna runs between 180 and 195 degrees. What stops all of us from jumping into saunas and breathing that in for an extended period of time to kill the infection in the lungs?
Even if you're in a sauna, believe me, the temperature in your lungs is not going to be that. And by the time you get infected, the virus isn't just floating in the air spaces, it's in your cells. So you'd actually have to heat up your cells to that temperature and they'd all die in the process. So unfortunately, being in a hot setting will not cure you. There is starting to be a little bit of evidence that suggests that maybe there will be a seasonal improvement. It's not known for sure yet, but there are some models that are seeming that infections are worse in areas that are cooler and not as severe, meaning they don't act as contagious. Each person doesn't infect as many others in the hotter climate. If that's the case, we will get a benefit as summer comes on. Of course, if we haven't gotten rid of it completely by next fall, it will come back with a vengeance.
Affirmative. Thank you for your input.
Okay, this is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. Now, let's see, did I miss anybody out there who is waiting to ask a question? We're talking about COVID-19 with Sheila Sund, MD. And
I got one more that I just thought of, that which I'm not sure of yet, K6SDX.
ARK.
Okay, well, let's take Dan first, and then Robert, we'll put you on deck here. Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, interaction of getting the haircut. Is barbers all shut down, or is that even feasible, or everybody going to get shaggy?
Yeah, I don't. Unless your barber has masks, which they really shouldn't be using because they're needed by healthcare. Yeah, you're going to have to figure out, we're all going to look a bit shaggy. I mean, I'm a woman. I had to actually tell my hairdresser that she should close. And for the first time, I'm getting to see what gray hair looks like. So, yeah, we're not going to be all that pretty when we come out of this, but I think it's worth it.
KG7, GDB, that going back to what we were talking about originally, that kind of setting, again, if you use logic, they are, you know, they did close the barbers, but barbers work in a, they stand next to you in your personal space for more than 15 minutes, and you know, we're in close contact with a person who's in close contact with lots of people. So that is a very risky person. And if you had gone to the barber, you know, then I think your 14 days would start from that barber visit at this point in time. So they are closed, and yeah, we're all going to get gray and shaggy. Let's see. Do we answer that question? And if so, let's move on to Robert, W1ARK.
Okay, there's two things. Earlier, you had a fellow who wanted to ask something about a comment on the post office. My question is, what do you do about the fresh fruit from celery, apples, oranges, strawberries? Apples and strawberries have coatings on them. To help them ward off any things like the virus stuff. But strawberries and other things, vegetables, do not. What do you do with them?
I wish I had that answer to that one, because it makes me nervous, too. All I can tell you is that so far, foodborne COVID-19 hasn't seemed to be an issue for very many infections. Whether there's a few out there, possibly. But again, in general, we know that the greatest risk is what you breathe in by who you are near, not from what you touch. Having said that, I scrub my smooth-skinned fruits off. I don't use a bleach on them, but I scrub them with, you know, dishwater soap. Anything that I could scrub, I would. And if you wanted to be extra careful, I would say that you don't otherwise eat fresh fruit, you cook it. Because if you cook it, you're going to kill that virus without any problem at all. You could also think like things with broccoli. It's people touch it, but like they don't wiggle their fingers in a little bit, so you could probably wash the outside and be okay. But there's no firm guidelines. I'm just kind of thinking logically about this, and that's the best you can do with your fruits and vegetables.
Okay, very good question. Again, these are all great questions, and this is, you know, I'm glad that people are asking them, because there's no such thing as a dumb question. The only one that's a dumb question is one that's not asked. So got about, you know, 3 or 4 more minutes here left in our net. So I know she wants to do kind of a little closing statement for you guys. Is there any other questions that are burning in your mind? Again, we can take them offline, and you can answer your questions on, if you do the contact on disasterdoc.net. Mentioned that website before, and you can also put questions on our wa7abu.com groups.io. If you're not a member of that, it's a good idea to be a member of that, and you can put questions there, or you can email me, kilogolf7golfdeltabravo@arl.net, and I will pass them on to her as well. So any other questions here before we do a kind of a closing statement here from the doctor?
JLO.
IVN.
Okay, we have Jeff there, Kilo Alpha 7, Juliet Lima Oscar. Go ahead.
Yeah, the basic question is, especially for those of us who are elderly and sheltering at home, what should we look for to indicate when it is really getting safer for us to go out and be exposed? Now, I know, you know, if we're practicing just going to the grocery store, there's smaller risk of infection. But before we kind of resume more of our activities, and especially the elderly who are at risk, I mean, what kind of guidelines can you give us as far as when can we be assured that the risk is low for us to once again go out and mingle socially? KA7JLO.
That's an important question, and it really comes down to the fact it's not your risk. You could mingle socially if you've been totally isolated for 14 days and you want to mingle with somebody else who has been totally isolated for 14 days. You could do that. But if they have had anything to break their isolation, you're now taking their risk on. But this is all about risk for you, and this brings me to actually my final message, is that this is not about your individual risk anymore. We are literally at war, and we are the soldiers. soldiers in this war is our healthcare professionals. Right now, they are the frontline soldiers with like 10 bullets a day. They don't get to change their masks with every patient. Most of them are only getting to change their masks once a day already, and they're not even treating very many sick patients yet. In other areas of the world, they are having 15 to 20% of their infections are healthcare workers. I don't think any nurse I know of signed up to be a soldier, and yet we've put them in that position. So if you break the rules and go out and socialize, you are literally, it's not supporting the troops. You are actually endangering the lives of all the healthcare professionals. And that's the most important message I can get there. It's not about just keeping yourself safe. If we cannot, as a community, keep this completely suppressed until ventilators, protective equipment, et cetera, build up and we have the capacity to take care of them, we're going to lose our healthcare force, and it will take years and years and years to get it back.
Yeah, just to clarify, my question was exactly along those lines. What kind of communications can we expect from the community to let us know when it's appropriate for us to mingle again?
You're going to have to, it's going to depend upon your leaders. I would trust your state leaders over your national leaders right now. They're the ones that seem to be looking at the whole model of healthcare better, and I don't want to get into politics. I'm just saying, realistically, that's what we need to do. It would be great if nationwide we could start strategizing about how to bring certain businesses back in, up testing so that we can bring workers back to work safely. There's a lot that could be done. So far, it's not happening, so I can't tell you how long this would need to go on. If we approached it strategically, I would estimate 6 weeks to 12 weeks that we would have to be this isolated to allow us to put those strategies together. Without those strategies, if we relax the distancing we're doing right now, it's just going to come back.
Okay, now I want to get the other, there was one other person with a question there, and I actually forgotten who it was, but I'm going to get you, I think it was Ivan maybe. Go ahead.
Yeah, it was Ivan here, Whiskey 7 India, Victor November, and you pretty much answered my question. My only add to the question would be, how do you know, what would be a good indicator, one way or the other, as to whether you have inadvertently been in contact with someone that could be infected?
The best thing is to find out as much as you can. If it's somebody you know, find out what their risk is. And I can't give you all the details, but it is pretty easy. If you wanted to send me an email, I can tell you based upon what their contact is, how that translates to risk for you. In general, if you have had close contact with somebody that is positive, then your risk is reasonably high. If you have had, it actually would be considered high risk. If you have had close contact with somebody that had close contact, so kind of two levels removed, you're probably medium risk. By the time you've had close contact with somebody that was close contact, the risk is pretty low.
Outstanding. Thank you very much for your time, Sheila. I'm just going to throw this out there for every single one of us in the ham world that's here. Thank you. You are awesome. And continue doing your good work. We love it.
This is KF6FYD.
She says you're welcome there. And she would consider if we wanted to do another session, perhaps we could do it on Friday. That was something that we got to get some feedback on, come back, because the things are happening very, very quickly. And one of the sobering things you can look at is there's some graphs of how quickly the little spots are appearing in Oregon and around the country. When we first started talking about this, and I first didn't go to my CTR meeting at the beginning of the month, Oregon had just really gotten, I think Marion County had gotten their first case. And now not that much time has passed. Here is the 24th. So it's not been very long, and you'll see a lot of cases already. So just it's sobering to see how fast it is happening. And we do need to, you know, keep abreast of things, understanding new rules and why it is, you know, that we're having to put them in place and these kind of things. Richard, I think you're going to get the last question tonight. Go ahead, please.
I really don't have a question, except that I think everybody should sit back and think for a minute that how blessed we are that we don't have it, and hopefully that we don't have it, and just to maybe do something we're not supposed to do, but pray for the people that haven't got it, and maybe that'll help a little bit. This is KF6FYD.
This is Sheila, and exactly. I mean, the numbers in our community, although growing rapidly, the individual risk to anybody is still low. The chances that you've been infected, it's not zero, but it's still low because we've actually acted reasonably fast. But, like, I know all of these healthcare professionals. They're my best friends, and they are working with one mask a day. And with one mask a day, we're talking locally in Oregon. With one mask a day, they're still going to be running out on April 6th. And if we didn't do it all this seriously, they're going to drop like flies, and I'm going to lose a lot of people that I am close to. So your risk is low. Be at home. Don't be anxious. If you stay at home and you treat your groceries and your things right, you can actually relax. Okay, your risk is low. Just settle in, enjoy being at home, think of new ways to do things, take a deep breath, and be prepared to be there for a while the war goes on in our hospitals. Okay, and if you can do that and think about them, think about the patients that are sick, send out whatever good thoughts you can, because you're safe at home. That's really what we all need to do now.
Okay, very good. Very good comments. So I want to go ahead and close the net for this evening and really thank everyone. The time is now about 8:08, and we've gone a little bit over. This concludes the 529 emergency discussion net. This net meets each Tuesday evening at 7 p.m. on 145.29 megahertz, and our thanks go out to Dan WA7ABU for the use of the repeater. Thanks to all the 36 people who participated today and those who stood by to give us a clear channel. This is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo, closing the net now at 8:08 p.m. We now return the repeater to normal undirected amateur use. Thanks, everyone. KG7, GDP, clear.